Hello there, dear listener, and welcome to the Wiser Than Yesterday podcasts. We have myself, Nico Vrieke, and my good friend and co-host, Sam Webster-Harris, as he goes around the internet. We have just finished a kind of a different book than what we're used to reading, especially recently. It kind of threw me back a bit to the books that we read around racism and invisible women. The book is called No Offense, How to Have Difficult Conversations for Meaningful Change. In the book, activist Gina Martin explores constructive answers to 20 notorious conversation-stopping phrases that are often used in discussions around social justice topics like male and female violence, racism, the trans movement, etc. Her fundamental point of the book is that these conversation stoppers threaten to distract and derail our most urgent conversations. And she, in this book, tries to provide constructive answers to keep the conversations going. And so the basic thesis of this book is that a lot of people try to have conversations with some of their less, man, I want to say the word woke, but that puts it in such a bad light, right? And so maybe, I don't know, progressive, maybe that's a better word. I don't know. But I guess you know what I mean, right? Some people are very in touch with social justice, are trying to do a lot to combat it. And some people just care way less or are more conservative in their thinking. And so in conversations between these two parties, you often have comments that are essentially conversation stoppers. And these are all separate chapters in the book. There's 20. I'll list a few. When guys do something wrong, it's like, oh, boys will be boys. Let's not talk about it. Or to play the devil's advocate and taking a position that makes it very tough to counter argument against, I guess. Or not all men are like this and not all men do this. Islam is an oppressive religion to women. Another one. Or in terms of the racist discussion, I don't see color. Or in terms of, oh, this person did this. The answer is, yeah, but it was a different time. And there's many more. Perhaps, Sam, you want to highlight a few?
I felt a bit confused, but part of that was like, I had no idea who it was talking to, because half of it felt like it was just a liberal book of how to talk to like the right-wing book. And I was like, is this for just for other liberal women who are meant to be reading this? Am I supposed to be like the right-wing man reading this? I just had no idea who it was for. It changed a lot because there was one whole chapter about fast fashion that felt like it was just for women that buy too many clothes. And I'm like, I do not fit the person that needs to read this chapter. It felt more like a letter to the person that was writing it about their own confessions about how much of an idiot they were. And I was just so confused half the time of like what I was meant to be feeling.
Mm-hmm. A part of the reason for that, I think, is that the book is basically maybe half chapters written by the author herself and the other half is written by people that work around some of these issues that they talk about. So in the case about fast fashion, it's a woman that I think grew up fairly poor, but and noticed that she actually bought a lot of very, very cheap clothes, but also way too much and like how buying stuff made her feel. But I totally agree with you, Sam. Like that is one of the chapters that did not speak to me at all because I don't buy clothes really. I have clothes from years back and I wear those. In general, I'm fully aligned with you. This was a book written for people that are generally already aligned with the message around these social justice topics. So they are for the people that are already convinced and that struggle having conversations around these topics with the people that are not yet convinced. And the goal of this book is to give them ammunition in these conversations. And ammunition is probably too harsh of a word because I do kind of feel like the attempt of this book is to provide constructive ways to talk about things and not necessarily really shut them down.
Definitely. It's within like protection to like disarm the person that may be attacking you or making you feel weak and be able to have like a more productive conversation. The idea of the book I really liked and the execution of it just wasn't quite what it could have been. And just the tone, just by the end of the book, I found it kind of insufferable to listen to her, even though I was like, I want to listen to you. I know you're trying to say good things, but it was just like, and it was like, oh, just stop lecturing me about like the problems that, yeah.
I do feel like this is interesting, right? Because what I want to spend this episode on is we're in a bad position to talk about these social justice topics, but I did notice also a very primal / fundamental resistance against some of the things that were said in this book. And this book tries not to do that. But I often feel when we're talking about some of these social justice topics, it's like there's often a very like a moral superiority in the way people talk about things where I believe that from a moral and ethical point of view, I am right and you are wrong. And, you know, from all of the books that we read, Sam, we are almost perfectly empathic with people. And so we realize that telling people that they're wrong never changes their mind. And so I think this book does a pretty decent job, I feel like, or at least better than what I've seen, which, to be fair, like, I haven't spent a lot of time in this era and this space, but I do feel like it's trying to avoid being too patronizing.
Yeah, it does try to work out, like, why people are saying and give some history of, like, okay, these are the reasons why you, this might be the go-to answer for you to say, here are some of the reasons why you're wrong afterwards. It's sort of nice, but I feel like I could have enjoyed it better. But I was also kind of struggling with my own being a white guy, being like, this is because I'm a white guy and I just don't want to hear this. Or am I actually the cause? I'm just like avoiding it and trying to put myself in the other thing. And so the whole time I was also a little bit confused. And I definitely learned some things through the process. It wasn't terrible in that sense, but I'm not sure how much I would have got through if it wasn't for the fact I was reading it for this compared to other things.
So let's talk about the awkward feelings that both of us had while having some of the discussions. And let's talk about ones that are probably more relevant to us, because like the point of fast fashion for poor people is not really super relevant. Also, there was a chapter about immigrants. So the book was fairly specifically targeted at the UK, I found, which is, because you're British, more relevant for you. But for me, it's like all the immigration policies in the UK. She went quite deep into that, and that was a much less relevant topic for me.
Yeah, and the stuff about government, she spoke a lot about Boris Johnson.
She doesn't like, clearly. So let's talk about some of the more relevant topics for us, right? Which is, I would say, maybe specifically the chapters around toxic masculinity or the whole boys will be boys narrative and why boys specifically are treated differently from girls. I also felt some resistance internally, and I want to explore with you like where this comes from, this resistance. Is this a self-protective mechanism where if I don't believe in this, I don't have to feel bad about who I am, because, or I don't have to accept how privileged I am and how lucky I got, and I can feel more proud about whatever I have achieved, right? Because if you believe that you're super, super privileged, then you could almost make the case that whatever you've achieved was because of that privilege versus whatever you actually did as an individual. And so anyway, why don't you walk me through your feeling and try to explore that, and we can have a chat about it.
That's very interesting way that you've set that up, in terms of, as a human, whatever you do, you always think it's because you're good. And then it's hard to acknowledge where you've come from in context of it. And I remember when I was doing my first business at uni and someone asked me, like, what's the main correlation between like all the entrepreneurs that you kind of work with at the university? I'm like, basically, we're all kind of the people that don't need to get a job. We're like the richer kids of the uni, because everyone else is just working in the cafe or something, because they actually need to make money straight away. They can't like go risking doing some stupid business stuff. And obviously, if you actually ask any one person, they thought it's because they're brilliant or like courageous or something, or had some like bright ideas. But it's kind of hard to acknowledge these kind of opportunities and have no idea what you would be doing if you did grow up and the only thing you really needed to do was try and get out your country and find some like super basic job so you actually just had an income. That's really hard to empathize with those situations. And then same with like all the feminist stuff. It's then like how much of all my success has come due to the fact that I'm just a guy and didn't have to worry about things, because there's just a lot more things going on as a woman. Yeah, I just don't worry about, as far as traveling and things as well, it's just so easy. I just want to go somewhere, so I go. And they really had to think about what I'm wearing, what protection I need, when I'm going to be on my period, all these different things. This is pretty simple. So yeah, all the things I've done in my life, I'm like very privileged to have done. And then trying to think about the ways that I might protect myself from not helping, because I guess like the conversations of boys will be boys or not all men do those things, it's like they are things that I do sometimes want to say. And I probably have said them sometimes. Not sure if I did them in the way that necessarily shut down the conversation, but perhaps I did and didn't know. I kind of like to come from a place of like wanting to understand the other person and their problems. So yeah, half of me is like, well, what is the person saying? Because I feel like she only talks about like how the other person can get better often. Because a lot of the sort of media that comes out around what someone else needs to do to be right, like how can you steer the conversation? Because I've spoken with lots of women about like feminist topics and I've just been really interested and had good conversations. But then one time with my girlfriend, she came back and just ranted about like stuff for 10 minutes at me because she just had a bad day and she'd had like a bunch of different things going on in the store and she was just sort of feeling a bit overwhelmed. And then the first thing that came out of my mouth when she finally gave me a chance to sort of speak was like, you know, there are some problems for guys as well, because over dramatizing everything can like instead I was trying to establish some balance, but then she was like, why are you shutting me down? And it obviously made everything worse, and it was a stupid thing to say, but like she kind of pushed me in that direction rather than, obviously I should take ownership, like clearly that's not the thing that I should have done. But also she could have really helped herself a lot better by like the way she came across in the first place. If you really come across like just super like blamey or like without any balance or interest, you're going to more likely going to get the sort of responses that shut you down rather than come from way of understanding. So I don't think the woman really helped. And often having these kind of things that just say that you're completely right or that someone is deliberately shutting you down, like maybe someone's saying that like not all men do this is their way of trying to sort of just establish some understanding that they could then like start listening to you and empathize. But she didn't really ever talk about that, the side of like trying to understand them to kind of help them get towards you better. And it kind of more validates that you should be angry if someone ever says these things because they're being an idiot in that sense. So there's some things for both sides of people to work out better when it comes to the empathy on these things.
So just in response to your last point, I have learned / found / people have told me / I've read this on the internet that often I'm pretty like a problem solver. And so I want to solve problems. And so when people, more specifically my wife, comes to me and complains about something, my natural tendency is to present potential solutions, while the best course of action would, the only thing that I need to say is, oh, that sucks. It's the only thing I need to say. And one of the reasons why I'm generally always trying to find solutions, and more specifically in these types of situations, not necessarily like in more abstract or more mechanical things, more interpeople situations. And this is one of the fundamental problems that I have with the identity politics, right? This book talks around identity politics a lot. It's a lot about men versus women, white people versus black people, rich people versus poor people, Muslims versus non-Muslims or Christians. So I struggle with this. And I think the part of the struggle is because I don't want to confront the fact that I'm in every single way privileged and don't want to confront the fact that that might have made my life so much easier than other people. So I think that that's one reason that I struggle with this, and I acknowledge that. But another reason that I struggle with this is because I strongly believe in the concept of a locus of control. The locus of control concept, I learned this in a book called The Seven Habits by Stephen Covey, I believe. It's one of the first nonfiction book I ever read. And it has probably changed my life because that's a book that I said, like, holy crap, this nonfiction stuff is actually really useful for your life. So that's when I, you know, got into these books, read a bunch more. Anyway, so the locus of control essentially means that there are two types of people, very broadly speaking. There are people with an internal locus of control and people with an external locus of control. If something bad happens to you, people with an external locus of control try to blame others, other things than themselves. People that have an internal locus of control will always try and think, okay, what did I do that led to this less than positive outcome? And for me, identity politics is too much along the lines of having an external locus of control. So since reading that book, I've always tried to pull the locus of control towards me and think, what decisions have I made that led to this outcome? What can I learn from that? And how can I avoid this in the future? And to me, focusing too much on identity politics, which is the world consists of lots of different groups, and whatever happens to those groups are defined by their identity more than by their actions, I do think that it has an impact. But I also kind of feel like if you're part of a minority, and again, this is terrible for me to say because I'm not part of any minority, but if you're part of a minority, it'd be better for you and for your outcomes if you just assumed, and if you tried to make it into a habit of thinking that your actions led to an outcome instead of your identity leading to an outcome, because that will allow you to make improvements. Because I don't subscribe to the fact that identity defines outcome. I think as a certain identity, you might have a tougher time doing and achieving things. But I think people from every type of identity have achieved all of the things, essentially. And so there's more power in an individual than their identity would define.
It's often like much harder than people of that identity may have done the thing you want to do, but usually there's someone that still goes and does it anyway. It's not impossible, but it's super powerful, isn't it? It just feels like you can't really fix anything when you feel like the whole world's against you and that there's nothing you can do, which is part of, I guess, like when I spoke about my girlfriend was sort of just blaming everything on feminism and patriarchy and stuff. It feels like she's sort of abandoning self-control, and it kind of makes me want to be like, you can do something. But then that's sort of, she's like, why is it all my fault? And I'm like, I'm not saying it's your fault. I'm just saying it's like you can choose to do things and be happy or find a way to like do something. And it can always come across as a bit patronizing when you're sort of trying to help someone or I don't know, as a white guy, it's sort of not the easiest position to ever say like, I have a similar problem because you don't, which is a blessing, but it's, here I am with my white guy problems that I'm a white guy and I can't empathize. Damn it. Lols. Cause yeah, you don't want to be like talking down to people being like, well, you just need to sort yourself out because I think that it possibly is the answer, but it's not something that I should say, which is frustrating for both people involved because the whole world needs to change in every way and it's not going to change. So like you have the problem for the rest of your life. Like that's not empowering. It doesn't give them anything useful. If it's something that's completely irrelevant, affects everyone. Like if the weather is a problem, you can just be like, right, take control. If you don't like the weather here, stop complaining about it and move somewhere else or like deal with it and wear like a jacket. Like that's easy to say to someone because if it affects everyone. But if it's sort of, there's this member of society, which I'm in, but some of these members are dicks to the rest of them. And there's this whole like sort of general thing that affects you that doesn't affect me. It's hard for me to sort of tell you what to do.
You know, on that last point, in the book's defense, and specifically the author's defense, she is actually fighting to change the system to improve, you know, these inherent difficulties in the lives of minorities. And to be fair, like, I think having conversations about this is also a good thing, right? I think providing people the tools to overcome some of these conversation stoppers so they can start working on the inherent defensiveness of some people around these topics, I think is generally a good move.
For sure. So a lot of these conversation stoppers are very nuanced because it depends on the intentions of the person. So I felt like it's often like, this may also be my identity, like not wanting to be involved, but part of what the person's doing. Because some of the things that people say can come from like the more like right-wing people that are being kind of dickish with these words, sort of like the boys will be boys or to play devil's advocate. It, like you could be saying like, oh, just something that, to put something out there that like just makes you completely wrong. But I might also say to play devil's advocate just to like find different perspectives. Because if whenever someone's arguing something, I always want to try and get like the full understanding of it. And I don't think I'm trying to shut people down as such. And I feel like this is something that you say as well. Like whatever it is, if I just have an idea, I feel like you'll often be like, well, to play devil's advocate, Sam, like, what about the opposite of it? And like, you're not trying to make me feel stupid or like I have no ideas. It's just trying to like help me see some other angles of the truth, which may or may not help me. And it can come from like a nice place, as in saying boys will be boys isn't really that useful.
Can we spend some time there? Because I totally agree that the whole playing the devil's advocate, I found too nuanced to have a strong opinion on. I generally think that it's in many cases productive. I might butcher this, right? But the point that she makes around playing the devil's advocate is that when you're complaining about, and this specifically happens around like male to female interactions and microaggressions, women talking about this puts herself in a very, very vulnerable spot. And a man playing advocate of the devil and taking a stance puts themselves in a very, very strong spot because you have plausible deniability around anything that you say. Because anything that you can say, like, oh, but I don't believe that because I was playing the devil's advocate. While if you're in the defensive position or in the position of recounting some of the experience you have, it's very hard to have a constructive conversation around sensitive topics when one person has felt it very viscerally and the other person is just playing a part and can always hide behind, oh, I was just, you know, playing the devil's advocate. And so it's very nuanced. Like I haven't figured out how I think about it, but anyway, that's the point she was making.
I feel like I'd really enjoy talking to her. I was kind of like, maybe I'll reach out to get her on my podcast. I feel like she'd be a good chat. Like as in she thinks about lots of things, as in it is actually like a hard thing she's taken on around trying to talk about these things. And there's just such a spectrum of like where you are on it and whether you're sort of the more right-wing conservative trying to do it to actually hurt people, whether you just sort of don't like your views being challenged or if you're sort of saying that to kind of open up a conversation, it's confusing. And it's just nice that she's trying to like have a conversation on these things. It definitely made me wonder myself about stuff and it did help in some ways. Some of the things I think is just a bit interesting on the work side of things, like my girlfriend's super skinny. And she feels like she gets skinny shamed a lot. And that's like a really hard one around like most of the stuff out there is around being nice to people who are fat and stuff. And so it's interesting the chapter, which she was saying like we glorify people being skinny. And so most of the chapter is being like, it's fine to be fat and fat might even be healthy. depending on what you're like. And it felt like very much the opposite of the conversations I ever have with my girlfriend, who feels like she'll be in a store for fashion and then like some women will be with her boyfriend and then they'll see her and then they'll just start scowling because they'll be like, oh, this is hot skinny girl. And now I feel a thing. And it's not her fault, but it's kind of interesting. I didn't like some of the things that she said in this chapter around, like, she said BMI was invented by a mathematician, not a doctor. So how do we know BMI is healthy? And I'm like, a mathematician can probably read statistics and work out some science that makes sense. BMI is probably a pretty good indicator, unless like you're just sort of coming up with random stuff to say at this point. And she's also like, it was impossible to tell if someone's healthy by looking at them. I'm like, okay, there might be the odd incorrect someone who's mostly healthy, but is like a bit overweight. If someone's like nearly death, I can probably tell by looking at them. If someone's got like a liver problem and has gone like yellow, I can probably tell by looking at them. There's a lot of ways that I can tell if someone is unhealthy by looking at them. And you're just saying some statements that I really don't agree with that I actually have some knowledge of. And so it does make me wonder what else she says. Whenever people go out of their like marriage of competence and I see that they're clearly wrong, it always doesn't help the rest of their arguments, which is just one thing that was like kind of annoyed me. But then like, maybe that's just me seeking some reasons to find this person is wrong to make me feel better about everything else.
We could probably do another episode in the book around, you know, health, because we'd read a lot about health, but not necessarily around social health, like basically the pandemic of bad health outcomes. Because yeah, I've been hearing mixed things where, you know, if you're fat, but you have a lot of muscle, it's actually not as bad as other stuff.
That, yeah, I feel like it's not great for your joints.
Something to potentially dig into. But it's interesting what you said. Two things that I want to touch upon is, first, boys will be boys. So I have a personal anecdote here. When I was a college student, or like 19, 20 years old, you know, I would go out, I would sleep in like a student house, and we would have 30 people there, and then 20 people would all together go out, and it was like equally split, boys and girls. And I remember that when I was drunk, maybe one or two times, I would open up girls' bras from behind of the girls that I lived with, and I knew them pretty well. And so obviously it's not fun, right? And it's me being really annoying, but they didn't really mind. They were like, they like laughed it off, or at least
gonna get canceled now for admitting this.
Well, yeah, I did this, but one of the girls actually like felt really, really bad looking back, thinking about doing that, because this was one of the examples that was, you know, brought up in the book. While listening, I was like, oh, I feel bad about that moment, right? You know, I'm going out and I did that. And, you know, the excuse I could use was boys will be boys, but it's not even a thing I should have done to the girls that, you know, I might have been sure that were okay with it, right? It's just not something that you should do. And so, yeah, it's one that struck a chord with me, the whole boys will be boys discussion. And I would say that, to be fair, like, I think that point is pretty good. You know, you and I, Sam, we read the book Invisible Women, which makes the case that basically like a human is a man in terms of like in science, in the medical field, and in many other fields. And the society would be better off if it would broaden the definition and actually get some data around differences between women and men. And so it's hard for me to predict how I will react when I have a son and a daughter, and the boy will do bad things and the girl will do bad things. And will I think boys will be boys? I don't know yet, but it's one that I'll think about.
Yeah, well, it depends on what it is. In boys will be boys, if they kind of have a bit of a play fight or something and it's just some guy stuff, like, it's fine. If they come in, make your house muddy, boys will be boys. It's a pleasantly fine thing to be like, yeah, he's playing with bugs, allow him. But if it's to do with like stuff that they haven't realized is perhaps a bit sexist, not so good. As in, is it when you're young, it's just a bit, you haven't really built up those levels of empathy, you haven't really necessarily done these things. So there are some people, like, when they're young, like, actually as bullies, to kind of just do that to like try and embarrass girls and do stuff. I don't think you would have done it in that sense. I think you would have done it a bit more playful, and perhaps with your slight levels of autism might not have thought of it as quite as bad as a thing. This also leads into the, it was a different time level of, like, I think a kid at that age now probably would have known about that and wouldn't do it unless they're actually a dick. Like, I had a sister as well, so she taught me how to undo bras and was like, this is a cool thing you can do, Sam. And so, like, most of the, like, she's taught me to be super respectful and, like, I think almost too respectful to women most of the time. And, like, actually, I could have just approached a girl and tell her she looks hot and in, like, a nice way. And I just would be way too scared to do that because of her. But that was something that I did get taught. And perhaps because you had, like, three other sisters and maybe we're used to just, like, playing that as a game with girls also kind of thing. And then you just need someone to say, like, you can't do this in public with women who aren't prepared for it, especially if it makes them feel like guys that they don't know would then feel comfortable doing these things. Again, these things are a little bit nuanced, but perhaps you can say, like, just don't do this in certain settings.
I did notice myself getting more careful around women in general. And so, for example, like the whole LaBrosse situation, I wouldn't do even before I read this book. There was no thought in my mind I'd do this. Is this just me being an adult man? Because to be fair, like when I was 20, I was still mentally 60 in many cases. My mental developed slower than specifically girls, but general as well. Anyway, I think that might be a consequence of also like the times and just the whole Me Too movement, which I think is very positive. Just hearing those stories. It's hard for me to imagine how much of a douchebag men can be. And this brings us into the not all men discussion. And that's another personal anecdote I'd like to touch upon. I have found myself in a situation. I don't know the specific situation, but I have been in multiple situations where someone said something, another man said something, which was sexist and unfair, not directly to someone else. So no one was directly targeted or offended, but between guys. And I didn't say, like, you shouldn't say that. Often these are, you know, men from different generations, which brings us into the, it was a different time, but I could do a better job of being more of an ally to, you know, I would say different other people, minorities. This is women, but this is also people of color, etc. And while listening to this book, I made a semi-conscious decision to try and do that more, but it's never easy to do, right? If you do that, like be me. You're the guy that's like, oh, but it's just for fun and we're just joking around. And it brings us to this concept that we read about in The Elephant in the Brain. And so there's this thing of saying something or doing something that you shouldn't do to someone else. You're essentially taking a risk because they might shoot you down for it. But if they don't shoot you down for it, you've just strengthened your bond because the both of you or one of you did or laughed around something that you shouldn't laugh around. And that makes you kind of vulnerable towards each other because one person knows that you've laughed with women, for example, but that makes the connection between you stronger, if that makes sense. And I think a lot of humor is that. I think a lot of these remarks are that. Yeah, I think for a societal perspective, it'd probably be a good strategy for individuals to like start speaking up against this. But I do think that it's just not easy. Like generally, I don't consider myself a very confrontational person. I like to have everyone feel at ease and happy. And so I don't often decide to be confrontational. But you know, the moment you speak up for these remarks, you are being confrontational and you're putting yourself at risk. It's not a fun position to put yourself into if you're more of an introvert like me. So yeah, I can imagine you're the same, Sam, your British niceness and all.
Yes. It's not my biggest strength, but there's a few moments where I've had to sort of be like, just, you know, to say that, well, like, that's not actually that funny or something. It's definitely reading this night. Yeah, I could probably do a much better job of these things. Because, yeah, some people aren't great, but not that this is a good excuse. This is something that she could have perhaps put a thing on of being like, some of these people, I don't think it would change. And like, often it's kind of like the people that are sort of have like the rapey vibe or weird people that I feel like there's something wrong with them in a sense of, like narcissists, for example, you can't really stop them from being a narcissist. You may just get away from them. And like, I don't quite understand how their brains work. And I'm not sure that like, as in there's this thing called the backfire effect in psychology, where like if someone believes something and you give them contrary evidence, they believe it even stronger. So obviously like conspiracy theorists and things. But again, if someone is being a bit misogynistic or something, and then you tell them that they're a misogynist, they're like, no. And they just become even more like, you're a freaking fanny flapper twat, piss off. And you're like, I don't think I've helped anyone. And now this person's just even angrier. And I don't know what's the best way to approach these people. And I think the backfire effect and stuff was something that she could have spoken about in here that would have been really hard to talk about, but would have been interesting.
Yes, indeed. One final thing I'd like to talk about is the concept of the patriarchy. And it's something that gets mentioned quite a bit in the book. Not solely around issues around gender, but also around, I think, rich and poor, and even also racism, and that we're living in a like a white colonial society, and that has led to all of the situations that we have today. And I just find myself inherently struggling with the concept of the patriarchy. And the book also talks down or states that capitalism is the root of all evil. That's also one that I really, really struggle believing. And the moment you say things like this, It feels like I'd love to have a deeper discussion around this because I've never been convinced. I struggle to think about the patriarchy and what it actually is.
Yeah, me too. I feel like it's a bit of an amorphous, easy argument to just blame everything on. I feel like it's too unspecific. It's just like something makes me feel bad, so is patriarchy. And I think certainly there are things that like patriarchy hasn't helped with at all. And this whole like deconstructing the patriarchy and all this stuff. But some of these things are interesting. So there are some stuff that I hadn't thought about that has been useful talking to my girlfriend around. She says that girls find guys more attractive. That guy has a girlfriend, which is something I was like, I hadn't thought about that as a concept so much. And that like some girls can be kind of against each other, which is a bit of a patriarchy thing. She also feels like guys don't try it on with girls that have a boyfriend. And I'm like, that's just bullshit. Like, if you're a hot girl, there are plenty of guys that will try it on with you regardless. As in, like, the amount of people that have asked for her phone number, even though she has boyfriends, is plenty. But it doesn't make her more attractive if she has a boyfriend or not. Whereas for girls, someone that actually sort of has some status is like, okay, if they can get, like, it's part of, like, a mark. If someone has a girlfriend that's kind of hot and they still look at you, that's, like, a sign that maybe you're hotter or something. And that's, like, a status play in the world of patriarchy, which is, like, something that isn't necessarily a kind of thing that I would have thought about or just a blaming men necessarily, but it's just more like the system that is something I can like, okay. Some stuff I haven't thought about that makes some sense over the issue, as well as all the obvious things with patriarchy. But then there's lots of unobvious things that I'm not too sure what's going on there. And it's a confusing area. I don't know. What's your main understanding of patriarchy or any recent ideas you've had?
I agree with you. We said in the beginning that it seems like the patriarchy is very amorphous, hard to define thing. It's like the system is the patriarchy and it's an easy scapegoat because it can't defend itself, it feels like. I had a lot of discussions around this. So quick anecdote, I listened to this book while I was driving in the car to South France, which is about an 8-hour drive, with my wife sitting next to me. She suggested this book, which is why we read it. And we listened to the book for about 3 hours of the 8-hour drive. And the rest of the time was spent generally discussing. And so we had a lot of deep, hard discussions around this. One of them was a lot of the issues that I voice on this episode, I voiced with her as well. One of the points that she made is she is also the reason why we decided to read Invisible Women, if I remember correctly. And one of her points was that just the fact that Sam, you and I, we both agreed that a lot of the points that were brought up in Invisible Women were clearly because men used to be the default and were bad for society and just unfair towards women. And I think the book presents a few issues in the medical space and other spaces. And it's clear that there are still differences. I do think that men have some advantages in this world. That being said, I don't know the details by heart, but I seem to remember that there are more boys who don't go to school than that there are girls who don't go to school. And it seems like women are actually, when it comes to education specifically, winning. I don't think that's a bad thing. But to me, that shows that the world is improving and becoming more fair. Another issue that's often raised around the patriarchy is that the majority of people in positions of power are men, often white men, because of we're in a white dominant society, right? Fundamentally, I believe Taleb's thesis around complex systems, saying there are more men in power than there are women, and so that's a bad thing, is just very short-sighted, in my opinion. Because there's a lot of confounding factors. There's skills, which could be different. And I'm not saying they are, but there's desires, which could be different. There is just the problem, and it is a problem in this discussion of motherhood. And so there's a bunch of complex reasonings or complex dynamics in discussions around leadership of entities and their diversity. And my general thinking is then that the only way to be sure that we should have more women in power is when specifically, companies do good because they're managed well. And so if they're managed by fully female team or a mostly female team, and companies like and companies that are managed by mostly female teams do better, then over time, you're going to see a lot of women in power, because that's how this is, a survival of the fittest. And so if you do better, others do worse, they go out of business and you keep surviving. And so to me, giving everyone equal opportunity is most important. And I'm not too concerned around leadership at the top, and that to me is not necessarily an indication of having a systematic problem.
But there's so many factors, and when there are a lack of leaders, it's a bit less inspiring to go into that area if you can't see people like you. As in, there's so many different stories of guys that have done incredible things that very inspiring for a guy, but for a woman, maybe doesn't identify with herself. Like lots of things I identify from, like business or like adventure and stuff. There's just so many cool stories of guys that I'm like, oh yeah, I wish I could do that. These things have inspired me. But as a woman, trying to like envision yourself in those boots is a bit harder when like woman in the story is helping them as their wife and having kids and stuff. So one side, but then also I'm not sure how many women want to do some of these things, like politics and stuff sounds pretty shit. So I'm not sure why guys do it, but there's a lot more guys that have like that power complex that want to get into politics and stuff that don't think women are so into as such, or they do it for different reasons. So it's kind of an confusing one to be like, okay, actually how many of the women that aren't doing these things wanted to do these things? Who knows, but I wouldn't want to say that it's necessarily fair yet, which is, I guess, the main argument around, like, how do we make sure the system is equal? So again, we can't necessarily tell what it is in terms of actual opportunities being given to people to go and do these things. Well, yeah, motherhood, as you've said, and then teamwork of people. There's, I guess, this whole patriarchy is like, when I hear the word patriarchy, it makes me think of like a bunch of guys leading something that are kind of like making the system just for guys. And I think the word, it just makes you think of like lions and like just the men on top of the pride that lead it or something in my head. It just feels like this sort of, what's the, not the Ku Klux Klan, but like some of like the Quakers and like the other sort of slightly weird groups where they kind of just sort of mystically organize stuff or like organized crime. It sort of has a feeling of that in my head.
Maybe not a bad idea for us, Sam, to read a book about the patriarchy, because I feel like...
I think so too.
There might be stuff to learn and change our minds in this.
It was a different time, just on the story, conversation of general wokeism and other things. It's something that I am a bit confused with around. It's really hard to empathize with like 1,000 years ago of what it's like for people, or like a few thousand years ago, because it's not that long ago that we thought draining people's blood would make them healthier. And like a doctor would come into your house, take blood out of you and be like, thanks, doctor, you're freaking great. And we thought the world was flat and like, I actually believed it. And I'm pretty sure in the same way that like, if I was in Germany during the Nazis, I would probably have been a Nazi. Like if I was there 1,000 years ago as a white guy, I probably might have thought that black people were like a lesser species. Like it's just, if that's what everybody tells you, it fits quite nicely into your complex of like, hey, I'm some form of special, better thing. Like, it's very easy to agree with as a human if someone tells you you're special and that someone else isn't. So I'm pretty sure that anyone would have been like slightly racist, or, and so anyone that did push society forward in some ways, even though they may have been racist in other ways, is, I just feel like in 1,000 years time, stuff that we're doing right now, people will look back and be like, wow, well, you know, you took a flight sometimes, so we're going to have to tear down your statue because you're an absolute jackass twat who was trying to kill the planet. And right now it's like, well, you know, you take a flight, I have to get somewhere. But like in 1,000 years time, we're probably not going to have the empathy for anyone that burnt CO2 doing something, or something that we don't even conceive of might even be bad right now. Yeah. So I feel like tearing down people's statues just in these things is kind of an interesting one. Saying like 5 years ago, someone raped someone and then saying it's a different time, obviously that's not true. That's just rape and it's terrible. But some of the progressive, I think, is actually like lack of empathy from people with the not accepting that it was a different time for stuff.
Yeah, this is really, really complex. And also I would say situational discussion, because it's like one of the things I struggle with is, and this is slightly related to this, is can you celebrate a bad person for something good that they did, even though they were a bad person? Can you enjoy Michael Jackson's music knowing?
Yeah, so lots of people still enjoy Michael Jackson's music. That's what I was going to say. Whereas Ian, what's the band called? There was this band from Wales that was super, Lost Prophets. Did you ever listen to them? Oh, bro. Yeah, you'd have liked them. Last Train Home, that was a track. But it turns out the lead singer, he was so nice on like any interviews. He was just like he was one of like the icons of Wales, like one of their heroes. Turns out he was like properly going with babies and stuff and in prison for the rest of his life. But like no one listens to the Lost Prophets anymore. Whereas like for some reason, Michael Jackson people just do. And it's fine.
Yeah, it's a tough conversation. I've spent some time reflecting on this and I would say is it right to because people did some wrong things in the past. And there's a difference because there's things that are absolutely wrong, like, you know, molesting children or killing people, right? Those are like strictly wrong. And there are things that are, I don't know, maybe less wrong. Like, what's a good example of this? Like maybe eating meat today, right? I could see a world where in 100 years from now, you're like, you used to kill animals just because you liked the taste of their meat while you could eat plants. I can see that happen as well. And so anyway, it's a complex discussion. And generally, like, that's, I would say, what I like about the book. And I'll do you a favor, Sam. I'll score the book first. So I think that's probably easier for you. And I'll start now my review. I think it was a painful read, which is probably what it should have been. And it allowed me to self-reflect. It didn't stick with me very deeply. That being said, so while I was listening to it and around the discussions I had around it, this one with you and then the ones with my wife, I understand myself slightly better, or maybe I can argue, like I can verbalize the way I'm thinking and feeling about things better. Did I completely change my mind around some topics? No. Did I get nudged in the right direction? I do think so. I'm going to give this book probably a 5 out of 10, because on one hand, you know, it did a good job of highlighting some issues. I think, you know, in what it's trying to do, it's useful. I can imagine people that are really into these topics and have a lot of these discussions. I think her points of view around some of these really difficult conversation stoppers are very helpful, but also the thing that's actually a minority of people. And so if I try to think about my scoring and how many people would I recommend this to, it's probably not that many, because as you said, listening to this as someone that wouldn't or that isn't super an activist in this space, it felt like it was talking to a different audience.
I think I'd give it a 4 out of 10, actually. I really like the idea of this book, and I feel partly just the different people writing the chapters. Some people just came in with a proper bugbear and it just made it a bit confusing, and I just didn't feel like it was coherent as a book compared to what it could have done. I don't think you need to change a lot to get it up to like a 6 or a 7 of this book, just with like a little bit of like restructuring and just sort of making sure like it sticks to the point better. Otherwise, it did say some very good things. Also, just the tone of it could have been better. It wasn't very interesting. The narrative wasn't very engaging to listen to. I think it would have been nicer to listen to with my girlfriend for like half an hour and then discuss. I think it's good for that. So maybe I would have had a better experience. But just sitting with by myself was kind of just a bit like long and just felt like I was being lectured at. But like each one of the different conversations was quite fascinating, just to get her opinion on it, to then also actually have that conversation with someone else on any different one. Because I think the topics that she chose to talk about were good. But as a book to just listen to, it wasn't that great an experience for someone to do by themselves. And I don't think I'd recommend it to people.
Thanks, sir. So the title of this episode will be Two Privileged White Guys Try to Wrestle with Their Inner Selves Talking About Important Social Justice Topics. So I appreciate you doing that with me. Good. So this was this episode. Next episode, Sam and I will likely discuss The Dark Forest, which is the second book in the 3-part series written by Si Jin Liu. Probably butchered that name. The first book was The Three Body Problem. And yeah, it's a good book. And then we have another book that we're also reading, which is a physical book, which is a massive book. And it hurts.
We'll be ready with that for next year.
Yes, it's going to take Sam some time to finish it. I'm almost 20% into it, I think. So, getting there.
Who knows? Maybe I'll be reading on the plane. I'm going to be in the pool. So, might have a lot more time to myself, actually, for the next few months. So, I might smash it in a month. Who knows?
Who knows? Good. Thank you for listening, dear listener. If you liked it, let us know. If you have any other suggestions for books we should read. If you have a book on the patriarchy that you think is really good, let us know.
Yeah, good question. Thanks.
And with that, we're out. And we look forward to speaking to you in the next episode. Ciao.